Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Tommy, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Can you believe that it's 2022?
I cannot believe it's already 2022. And what are we talking about today?
You know, we're talking about the fact that if there was only one more two in the 2022, it'd be so much easier when writing checks. Do you write checks at all?
I don't know if I know what that means.
That's what I was afraid of. We're talking about the top 15 missed or golden opportunities that car makers just let slide for some reason.
Yeah, and there could be a good reason, there could be a bad reason, but there's a reason, and we think that they're pretty big missed opportunities.
Yeah, so sit back, relax, keep driving if you're driving, because we're about to give you, I think, an hour's worth of entertainment. But we're also going to be talking about the news, right?
Yeah, we're talking about the news of the week, and I think you have another Roman's rant.
I get to do a rant?
If you want to.
I want to do a rant. All right, I'll do a rant, because... Well, they're fun. All right, so how do you want to start with the news?
Yeah, we can start with the news of what's happened this past week. So Tesla has recalled 475,000 cars for defective backup camera wiring.
Yeah, and also for a defective hood latch. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was also a defective hood latch that could open while you're driving. That is not a good thing, especially since it's the front they're talking about.
Well, so apparently with the backup camera,
yep.
The opening and the closing of the trunk will cause the cabling or the wiring to start to essentially fall apart, and then you have an intermittent backup camera, and then it fails altogether.
Yeah, the front one's a little bit more interesting because that one can actually pop open or not fully close while driving, which would make it very hard to drive indeed without being able to see what's ahead of you.
Yes, that is not an ideal visual
no,
aid.
No, it's not. And you know what? I mean, look... Automakers have been doing recalls forever, so it's not unusual that Tesla finally got hit by one of these large recalls. But it's part of the kind of the game in the automotive world. And I did want to mention one more thing. For all of you guys who have sent us emails and posted comments, and I thought of this because our Tesla facility, actually half of it burned down. We did want to let you know that everybody on the team is safe and sound. We're here in Boulder, Colorado, and if you've been watching the news, you probably know that we were hit by some pretty devastating fires last week. Andre and I were driving in from Longmont, and we went up over the overpass, and all of a sudden we saw this incredible plume of smoke, and that's how we found out that kind of the western part of Boulder County was on fire.
Yep, so our thoughts and prayers go out to the people that lost homes and properties, and also a huge thank you to the first responders who fought tirelessly to keep the blaze under control. It was a real tragedy.
Yeah, they're saying over 1,000 structures, you know, Reed homes may have been lost. We did donate hopefully some money to help out our fellow Boulderites. And if you want to, go to our community page on truck or on car, and there'll be a link to where we donated money. Anyway, so thank you all for your outpouring of concern. I'm just touched and grateful that you care so much about the team. It just says a lot about the fact that we've got the best readers, viewers, and listeners out there.
So when we start talking about the top 15 automotive missed opportunities, I think the first one we have to discuss, number 15, which is a clear, obvious choice, is the lack of the Suzuki Jimny being brought into the States.
Yeah, you know, so what happened here in America, Tom, you know this, is Suzuki was here for a long time, and then they decided to build a car and name it the Mighty Wind or something, the Kazachi?
The Kazachi, yes.
Isn't that Japanese for like huge wind or mystic wind or something?
I have no clue.
You know what it is in car world?
What?
It's the Japanese version of the Jetta. That's what that was.
I don't. Is it really supposed to be Mighty Wind?
Yeah. Kazachi. It means like some kind of mystical wind or something.
Sounds like an extreme fart.
Oh, like a hurricane. It's like hurricane force winds or something like that. Anyway, if you guys know and you speak Japanese, let us know in the comments below. But yeah, it was crazy, dude. They brought in this Japanese Jetta, and then they were way ahead of the game, right? They had the SX4, which we tested, which was, really cool little small compact crossover that was four-wheel drive long before the Renegade, long before a lot of the in cars, and then because of various reasons they pulled out of the market, and then they decided to sell this really cool like old school Jeep Wrangler in Europe, right, and the rest of the world, called the Jimny, which we never got. And I think if they had imported that instead of Kazashi, we'd be all rolling in Suzukis.
Well, we did get a version of the Jimny.
We did.
Oh, yeah, we sure did.
The Sidekick?
Before that.
The Samurai?
The Samurai. Yeah, so if you remember in the 1980s, this was a car you owned.
I did own this.
We owned it brand new.
We owned both the Samurai and the Sidekick.
Yeah. You want to tell your Samurai story when you bought it and you drove it and you broke the engine?
Yeah, so when they started selling Samurais here in America, they only sold them in like four places, like California. And the closest place to me, and I was in Chicago at the time, was Atlanta, right? Mm. And so they were very inexpensive. I want to say they were like $7,000 at the time, which in 1980s money was, not a lot. And so I decided to fly down to Atlanta and drive it up to Chicago. And that's about a 1,200-mile drive. And I didn't know, Tommy, that apparently you're supposed to change the way that you drive when braking in a car. Did you know that?
I did know that, but...
I didn't know that at the time.
Yes, driving steady state for hours on end in your brand new Suzuki.
Yeah, like 15 hours between 55 and 60 miles an hour is not a good thing, because what it does is it wears the engine in at that speed. So what ended up happening was the Suzuki ran brilliantly like a top between 55 and 65 miles an hour, and then not so good anywhere else.
Didn't you get rid of that car because the ride was so bad?
Yeah, so short wheelbase. I'll tell you another story about the Suzuki. So I went to graduate school for journalism in Washington, D.C., and there's a guy, and I met Tom recently at the Chicago Auto Show, so if you're listening to this, Tom, I hope you don't mind me telling the story, because we got into a major fight about it.
Calling this guy out from 30 years ago.
Yeah,
here.
Tom, yeah. He's still a reporter in Chicago. So me and Tom went to broadcast journalism school, and I didn't have a place to stay, but I decided to take the Suzuki as my year in Washington, D.C. car. So I loaded up with stuff, and as I was leaving, Tom's like, hey, can you take this toaster oven for me to D.C.? Because I was driving. I'm like, no problem, Tom. I'll take the toaster oven. And keep in mind, this toaster oven was like $25, right?
Well, which back in the 80s was a lot of money.
And it was still like $25 in 80s money.
No, $25 in 1984.
Like it was like $26
That's
today.
Probably, what, with inflation, $3,000 to today?
It was like I don't know, Tom. Maybe you remember. But, it was like the difference between a Kmart back then toaster oven and a Walmart. They're like the same thing. Anyway, so I load up the toaster oven. I load up all my stuff. I'm going down to D.C. I have no place where to live. And I get a call from another friend who's like, hey, dude, you want to live on a boat? And I'm like, a boat? What do you mean? And he had found a place to rent on Main Street in D.C., and that's M-A-I-N-E, not M-A, M-A, how do you spell Maine, the state?
M-A-I-N-E.
Yeah, M-A-I-N-E, not M-A, yeah, not Main Street, but the State Street, which is Southwest, which is not a great part of D.C., at least wasn't back then. And the way that it worked was there was a marina there, and he had found like this 45-foot sailboat. It had a front berth and a rear berth and a galley in between, and we each would have one of the berths, and we would rent it in the middle of winter. And did you know, Tommy, that sailboats don't have heaters?
You know, I did not really take that into consideration.
That's another thing I did not know back in the day.
I guess that checks out.
And I did not know that Southwest was, not a grand place to live in D.C. Everything was Northwest, right? So I get there, and the marina was pretty cool. So like access to the marina was all fenced off, but there was a parking lot. So you had to have like a passcode, and it was, you know, it was kind of hard to get in there. And I was wondering, that's a lot of like fencing for, you know, a waterfront. Get there, unload my stuff, and the Suzuki had a soft top, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the way the soft top worked, it had these little like cleats, right, that you would just unsnap.
They're little, like little buttons.
Yeah, little buttons. You click, 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 and then you turn them and unsnap them so you could take it down really easily,
sure.
Right? But I did not bring the toaster oven into the boat because I thought I would see Tom the next day. I would just give it to him, right, at the at the offices, which were our which was our classroom.
Okay.
So I left it overnight. And come back the next morning only to find that the toaster oven had been stolen.
No.
Yeah. Somebody stole a $25 Kmart toaster oven.
Wow.
But here's the kicker, Tommy. Guess how they stole it?
By unsnapping the top?
No, by cutting my top.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. And the top back in those days was expensive. I want to say it was like $500.
Was it white? Did you have a white
top? It was a white top, yeah. And so they slashed the top, even though they could have just reached down and unsnapped it and taken the toaster oven.
Yeah.
So I go to Tom, and this is where the controversy comes in, and you can see how this is. And let me know who was right in this situation, because to this day, we still haven't sorted it out fully. So, you know, I go to him, and I say, hey, Tom, sorry, I left it in the Samurai, it was stolen, and my top was cut to get to your toaster oven. And instead of him saying, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, you know, do I owe you any money for the top? He said, well, you owe me $25 for the toaster oven. And I was like, dude, I did you a favor, and the favor cost me $500, and now you want me to pay you $25 for the toaster oven. And so we got into a big thing about it, and it was never. I never paid him, and I think he held a grudge. And I always felt like he owed me money, and then he felt like I owed him money. And it was one of those, like, Dear Abby kind of moments that we never actually resolved. How would you resolve that? Who was in the right there?
First of all, I think that he probably didn't owe you any money for the top. Because the responsibility of keeping the toaster oven secure...
That's what he said.
...fell within your hands.
Yes.
You were holding the goods.
Yes.
And you were not responsible with their location. However, I also don't think that you should owe him anything. I think that's extremely ridiculous, especially considering the financial hit you took from the soft top break-in. I would call it a net zero. You certainly lost out more than he did, but I certainly wouldn't go back at you and say, you owe me a toaster oven.
Yeah, that's
you know what
said.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I can see it, you know, 30 years later, I could see it from both perspectives. But, you know, it did cost me a lot because you can't then – it was in the middle of winter and it does snow in D.C. and the top was pretty badly cut. So I had to immediately spend $500 to replace the top, right, because otherwise it was going to – it was a brand new car. It would have snowed and rained into the Suzuki.
So in regards to the toaster oven, was it a brand new toaster oven?
It was a brand new.
Was it new in box?
It was a new in box. His mom, if I recall, had bought him a new toaster oven for his.
That does change the dynamic a little.
For his housewarming.
I mean,
in DC.
If what I would have done if I were you would be to take it out of the dot box,
yeah,
and then break it in with the toaster strudel, and then you can leave it in the car because no one wants a used toaster oven. But the new toaster oven, that was a key mistake in the story.
Well, how do you fence a toaster oven, for God's sakes?
Well, what do you mean, how do you fence?
Well, like people who are stealing toaster ovens, it's not like some criminal's like, you know what? My toaster oven broke this morning and I can't make a waffle. So what I need to do is go find one. Oh, look, there's a brand new one in that Suzuki.
Hey, that is a hot commodity if you live in a toaster oven drought area. I'm sure there's areas where they don't have toaster ovens.
This was like in the hotbed of you know, there was a huge crack epidemic going on in the 80s, right?
Well, there's your
and
answer.
And I figure the people who steal these things would probably fence them so that they could
what
have
do you mean
money.
By fence them? Can you
sell
explain
them?
That?
Sell them.
Oh,
for
is that,
money.
Is that like a 1980s term?
But yeah, fencing them. Yeah, like you take whatever you steal and then you give it to a fence, which is somebody who pays you cash and then, you know, pays you a dollar on
when you say
for
fence,
every $10 it's worth, right?
Is there like a fence you go
there's
to?
No, there's
like
no
a,
fence. No, it's worth like it's.
Are you making up words right now? I've never heard of fence a toaster.
No. It gives you like.
I'm gonna have to Urban Dictionary this one.
It gives you a dollar for every $10 it's worth, and then you take that money and do whatever you do with it. But
so there's like
I didn't think that a new toaster oven had any value when in the secondhand stolen toaster oven market.
Now this term fence, is this specific to toaster ovens? Or
no, you like fence, like you like steal jewelry and then you need a fence who somehow, you know, converts that jewelry into cash.
So the fence is not like an object used to keep the dog in.
No.
The fence is used
It could be, you know, a typical fence would be like a dishonest pawnbroker.
Oh, wow, I learned a new word today.
Right, where they would go, you'd be like, hey, I need to pawn this jewelry, or in this case, a toaster oven. nudge, nudge, wink, wink, it's mine. And then they would give you cash for it and you'd never come back to unpawn it and they would sell it and then they would make more money. Anyway, I don't know. Sorry, Tom. I told the story. You know, I think to this day it's unresolved.
Now. We're going to get the full internet forum to see who's
problem
in the right
now,
here.
Of course, is if he gets a hold of this story, he may want today's value in dollars. How much is that today? How much is $25?
$25 in 1980s money?
Yeah, how much is that
at
worth
at least
today?
$3,000 or $4,000.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Back in the day, you could buy a house for like $90.
With all the hyperinflation happening, it might be with $3,000 or $4,000.
So the good news is, if Tom does listen to this, he might have some folks in the comment section if you're watching this on YouTube.
Yeah, he's a reporter. Last time I saw him, which was like 4 years ago, he was still a reporter, I think, for Channel 7 News in Chicago or Channel 9 News, one of those two.
He's been tracking down that toaster oven for 30-some years. Do you know his last name?
I do, but I'm not using it.
Okay. Well, anyways, the new Suzuki Jimny, nothing about toaster ovens, is a phenomenal little off-roader. Unfortunately, Suzuki isn't around here in the U.S. anymore. And do you really think that this would pass crash safety here in the States?
No, but it would sell like hotcakes.
Didn't they? Hold up. I may have a hot take here.
Yeah.
Toaster oven hot take.
Okay.
Didn't the Suzuki Jimny have a stop sale in Europe for a year because it wouldn't pass emissions? Isn't there like some big stink about how it's not reading the Euro NCAP?
That does sound familiar, Tommy. Mm. I'm just saying, instead of the hot wind or whatever the hell that Kizashi was, if they had imported
the hot wind. That sounds like something you made last night on the couch.
Oh.
And then probably blamed it on the dog. Oh, I know that.
That dog does fart a lot. Plays bad dog. Anyway, it would have, you know, it would have been much better for Suzuki, and we could still have cool off-roaders. Missed opportunity. I was really sad to see Suzuki go, and I'm really jealous of like all of you guys in the rest of the world that get these really cool cars. And you know, it could be one of those like things where, you know, it's better to want than to have, because I'm sure like if you've had a Jimny, you might be like, hey, it's not as great as you think it is. But to us from over on this side of the pond, it looks really cool.
So moving on to a vehicle where a toaster oven was stolen from to a toaster oven that's well integrated, the Volkswagen California. Now this is a huge missed opportunity. I think it was Andre or Nathan. They spent a night
both
together.
Both of them, yeah.
They slept together.
They didn't sleep together. They slept in a Volkswagen. For those of you who don't know, it's like a really cool factory RV.
It's so cool. It's got the pop-up, like an old Westphalia that we got here in the States. It's got like the little kitchenette and the tables. And
yeah, remember, we saw them in Europe, and Volkswagen, I think, was afraid that they couldn't like import them without having to charge a lot of money. And to me, you know, like that Storyteller van that we reviewed last year, right, where we went to Moab, right, that was a $200,000 Mercedes Sprinter 4x4. And I think easily these little California vans, which were synchro, so they were 4x4 as well, right, they could have sold them for easily at least 95,000 people would have bought them like hotcakes. There's like a 2 year wait for a 4x4 retrofitted or refitted off-roady, overlandy, you know, Mercedes Sprinter.
Right. Completely now. Right. Yeah, and when you buy a Sprinter, right, so you buy the Sprinter from a company that takes basically an empty Sprinter, and then a lot of the times, unfortunately, they slap them together with tin foil and bubble gum, and you end up with these camper conversions that are just so badly made.
Probably put Tom's toaster oven in them.
Exactly. That's where the toaster oven went. But the Volkswagen California, ground-up Volkswagen camper, everything's
beautiful.
Volkswagen.
Beautiful.
Really cool, too, like two-tone, like a red and the white one.
And then you have all these people who, you know, well, you can see the used market in, like, you know, the generation that was brought here, right?
Yeah, the old 1980s Westies now are so expensive.
Exactly. Even the 1960s are incredibly expensive.
I do wonder about the dreaded two words.
What's that, Tommy?
Chicken tax.
Yeah. Yeah, so what Volkswagen was afraid of and is always afraid of is the fact that I don't go into the story, but it's a long story.
It involves chickens and Reagan and
Brats. Yeah, but it was like before then, like in the 60s, you know, the Europeans slapped a tax on our chickens when we were exporting them to Europe. And so we decided to get back at them by putting, I think it's a 25% import duty on every light truck that they import. So this would classify it as a light truck, not a car, right, or a commercial truck.
Yeah.
And so the way that Volkswagen could have gotten around it is the same way that Mercedes did it with their Sprinter 4x4s. And for a long time, what Mercedes did was they would build the Sprinters here, but really what they would do is they would build them in Germany. They would ship them to a company that outsourced the disassembly of the Sprinters, Tommy.
Okay.
And they would take them apart, put them in two crates.
Oh, my gosh.
Then ship them to the factory in Charlotte, where the factory, and I'm doing air quotes here, would then put them back together again or build them. And that's the way they got around. And it was still cheaper to actually take, you know, build them in Germany, take them apart, put them in two crates, put them back together in America, than to pay the import duty on the chicken tax.
Well, do you remember how Ford got around the chicken tax?
Yes, they didn't. They got fined. They were taking
the Transit Connects.
And they were putting seats in them.
And they were putting seats in them to ship them over.
Calling them passenger cars.
And then when they were here, they would take the seats and fly them back to Europe. So they would remove the seats back out and then plop them back in. I think they were built in like Slovakia or something.
Yeah, they got fined like some huge amount in the hundreds of millions. I just want to, in my brain, I see like some dude here in Dearborn, right? Next to a Sprinter van, and then there's this giant pile of like seats.
Oh, Transit, you mean?
Transit, giant pile of seats next to him where he just takes it out, throws it on the pile, and gets the next
one.
That's
probably how it went, actually. I think that's probably not far off. Jim over there was a seat removal guy. That's really funny. So, yeah, but the Volkswagen California, it would have been a massive success with a huge explosion of like van life and overlanding. They should have brought it over, even if it was 120 grand with the premium like quality that it was. I think they would have sold everyone they built.
The thing with Volkswagen over the last, like, you know, almost dozen years we've been doing this is everything is very centralized in Wolfsburg, right? That's Volkswagen's headquarters. And so it seems to me like they make all the decisions there. And that the people here have some input, but at the end of the day, Wolfsburg makes the decision. And that's it's very far from, like, California to Wolfsburg, and sometimes the decisions are made based on, like, what Europeans think about versus what Americans think about. I think Europeans have a hard time getting their, like, brain around just how crazy overlanding is here because they don't have, like, there's no BLM land in Europe, right? If you want to go camping, you can't just, like, in the UK or anywhere in, you know, most of Europe, you just can't, like, you know, pull into a forested area and camp. Here, no problem.
So this is kind of a fun little trivia fact here. Did you know Volkswagen has an original part number, 199-398-500A? No. Would you know what part number 199-398-500A is?
I know. That sound I hear is people Googling it.
Yeah, they are Googling it, but you can't Google it. You don't have your phone on you. What do you think it is?
I don't know. What is it?
It is the official Volkswagen Currywurst.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Volkswagen has their own sausage line in Wolfsburg.
Yum.
So if you want bread. Yeah, if you want a Volkswagen sausage, now you know the part number. So should we move on to number 13?
You want a story about Roadfirst?
Well, I mean, it's up to you. We're already 20 minutes in, and we're number 13.
So I used to go to the Detroit Auto Show when it was still a thing. And as a treat at the end of the show, I would go. So Volkswagen would fly in the Rotwurst from Wolfsburg, and then Audi would fly in the Weisswurst, the white wurst, right?
Wait, sausage. You're telling me they would fly in sausages?
They would, yeah.
An auto show?
Yeah. And they had like a little, like, you know, behind the scenes private area where if you were allowed to go in, you could have either some Rotwurst or Weisswurst, depending on what stand you were in, with some real German pretzels, like flown in from Germany, and with some real Weissbier.
Yep.
And so that was always a treat that I would treat myself at the end of a very too busy days in Detroit. I would you know, beg or sneak in or somehow get behind the red carpet into the VIP area of those two areas and then enjoy a rot or vice versa, depending on what I was feeling like.
So Detroit doesn't have adequate sausages?
No, they have very good German food, but these were apparently flown in because Volkswagen has their own Airbus.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I wonder if any of this has changed since Dieselgate.
Yeah, this was under Winterkorn.
Yeah,
so maybe
this sounds a little extravagant for modern
Volkswagen. Yeah, I think nowadays flying in your own beer, pretzels, and wurst might be frowned upon.
At the last Volkswagen event I went on, they gave me socks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you imagine what the environmentalists would say if you're flying in not just people, but sausage?
Well, did you know this, actually? This is interesting.
how much carbon you're using to fly in some white sausage.
When we went on the GTI and Golf R trip, they actually bought us carbon offsets to offset our travel emissions from the plane. That was interesting.
How many trees do you think you'd have to plant to offset, like, bringing in, let's say, you know, I don't know, 50 pounds of
bread. Sausages are that heavy. You can have a lot of sausage in a fairly small carry-on.
Yeah. Pretzels are very light, too.
Yeah, pretzels are light, too.
Yeah.
So moving into number 13 on our automotive missed opportunities is the Mazda MX-30. Now, this is a small electric Mazda crossover. I went and drove it, and it's a lovely car to drive. It looks pretty cool. It's got cork on the inside. Did you know that? You know why it's got cork?
Because it's cheap.
No, cork is really expensive.
Because people are recycling it from all their New Year's champagne.
Mazda was originally a cork manufacturer.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
You were full of interesting details.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? Anyways, so Mazda MX-30, great little car with one glaring flaw. It's got 100 miles of range, and it starts at like $35,000.
Yeah, in the news, we didn't talk about this, but in the news, is that a good broadcast voice?
Yep.
In today's news, one of the executives in Canada actually said that or admitted that basically it's a great car if you have another car, like one that you can actually road trip.
Buy our car if you first buy a different car.
Exactly. I think he meant like get a CX-5 and then throw in an MX-30.
Yeah, not a great thing. Now, the missed opportunity is so abroad, you can get this car with a little range extender, which is a gasoline engine that makes electricity.
You know, I recently heard that was supposed to be available with that little rotary range extender.
Yeah.
But those haven't even come to Europe yet.
I think they are.
I heard they were supposed to come. They were definitely supposed to come to Europe. And then they took it away for America. But I heard that they're even unobtainable right now in Europe with the range extender.
That's
Are you Googling it furiously?
No, I didn't know that. Because I've heard that abroad you can get it with the range extender. But maybe that's...
I heard you're supposed to be able to, but somehow Mazda even pulled the plug on the rotary. And let's face it, the problem with rotaries is while they're way cool, they were invented by a hell of a Nazi. Do you know that? The guy who invented rotary, people often forget that. He was like a card-carrying, Adolf Hitler-loving, hardcore Nazi.
That's a shame, but...
But the other problem with it is, that's a stupid aside, is that they're very hard to keep clean in terms of making them clean, right? They burn a lot of oil, and they're one of the reasons that you don't see rotaries right now is that they're just very dirty engines.
So, if they brought the...
Inherently so.
If they brought the rotary over, though, it would fix the car's biggest issue, which is the range. Because then you could drive it on electricity, and when the battery died... You could fill it up with gasoline and drive it with gasoline.
I mean, the skeptical automotive journalist, right, says to me they basically recreated an i3 from like 8 years ago.
But it's better.
It's the same thing.
No, it isn't the same thing.
It's got the same doors even, right? It's got those suicide doors just like the i3.
It's got cork in it, though.
Okay. All right. They've recreated the i3 with cork.
I like it a lot, actually. It's bigger than the i3, so it's more usable for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Really bigger? The i3 is huge inside.
The i3 is a toaster. Have you seen the i3 toaster?
And the i3 is rear-wheel drive. Is this front-wheel drive?
This is front-wheel drive, yeah.
i3...
I love the i3, but it's a little bit of a toaster the exterior. So moving on to number 12, the Generation 2 Nissan Leaf. So this was, of course, Nissan's electric car. It's the current generation Nissan Leaf. And the big missed opportunity here is they should have given it water-cooled batteries because air-cooled batteries, they're just bad. They're just not very good. They get too hot. They get too cold. They don't work very well when it's hot or cold. They overheat when they're charging, and then they lose range over time as they start to degrade quickly. They should have given it water-cooled batteries or liquid-cooled batteries.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, Nissan under, what was the previous CEO, the guy
Ghosn.
Under Ghosn, did something that is unforgivable in my mind, at least, and that is overpromise and underperform, specifically with the Leaf, right? I remember going once again to the Detroit Auto Show, and they were talking about the car of the future and then how incredibly life-changing the Leaf would be. And then the thing came out, and it was, one, hideous. Sorry, Nissan, the thing is just not a good-looking car. And number two, it had like 60 miles of range. And then they had this whole marketing scheme in place where they said, the average American drives only 30 miles a day to work, so 60 miles is plenty, forgetting that, of course, people need to do things like pick up their kids and get their dry cleaning, and that they get range anxiety. And with only 60 miles of range, it's just almost silly. Especially when you could buy a car for much less with a lot more.
Well, the good news is the second gen Leaf has over 200 miles of range, depending on the model.
It's still ugly.
It's not ugly.
It's ugly.
I mean, it's not a Jaguar E-Type, but it's not a bad-looking car.
Look, you want the car to be like the Jetsons car. You want it to be the... Right? That's what Tesla's magic sauce is, right? Not only does it drive like the future, it looks like the future. The Leaf looks like... Oh my, like an economy car that... got overexcited, thinking that it was the future.
Some of us like boring cars, though. You know, if you don't have much of a personality like me, then it's nice driving around in a little innocuous car. I think the design is
fine. You know what the coolest thing about the Leaf was?
It did have those little leaves that would show up on the...
No, but you're close. The coolest thing was in the navigation, it had this little circle that would show you... I thought that was really cool. It would show you how far you could go with the amount of battery. And then Audi, I think they were the first to do it, took it to like the next stage where they made that little like circle into like an amoeba, because Audi actually took... So what the circle did was showing you how like far you could drive if you were to drive a straight line from your position to...
But it was wrong.
Well, because so what Audi did was they took the topographical information, and so then their circle looked like an amoeba, because obviously if you're going uphill, you can't go quite as far as if you're going downhill or in a...
Yeah, the circle was...
I thought that was cool.
I think everybody does a circle now, and then the nice ones, like the Taycan we were just in, also does a little blob where it will decrease the blob depending on hills and stuff. But next up on the list...
Can I tell you a story about the Nissan Leaf? I know. We could do this.
We've been here for 20 minutes.
We could do this as a two-parter.
No, it's a one-parter. We're getting through all of
it
today.
I'll make the story quick.
I can tell the story because I've heard the story so many times.
All right, go for it.
When the Leaf launched, you wanted to go to the Kentucky Bourbon plant where they built Jack Daniels.
Jim Beam.
I know. And it was 40 miles away, and you asked the Nissan people, hey, can I drive 40 miles?
It was 65 miles, which would have been – which no, it was like 65 miles there and back. And the Leafs – it would have been just within its range, or maybe like 40, 55 miles. It was just, and they said, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, and the Nissan people were worried about you running out.
Mm.
Yep.
Which was a kind of a prelude to things to come with the Leaf.
So the next car on our list, another Nissan, but this was a missed opportunity for a different reason, was the Xterra. So the Xterra died at exactly the wrong time before the explosion in the market of crossovers, SUVs, off-roaders, and overlanding adventure vehicles. And this is a missed opportunity. I'm sure there were very good reasons why they killed it, but they kept the Frontier, which is essentially the same car, same version, going up until just last year. But they killed the Xterra in, 2014 or something? 2013?
Yeah, they killed the pickup truck and got rid of the SUV.
Yep, but the Xterra, if it was still around today, would be selling super well. Because look how well the 4Runner is selling. Even though the Xterra was old, it was very affordable, very good off-road, and super reliable.
Yeah, the thing about the Xterra that it makes it such a missed opportunity, Tommy, is it takes a long time for the aftermarket to build all the parts and all the community around the vehicle, and the Xterra had that, right? They had this incredible loyal owner base. They had an aftermarket, small compared to like a Wrangler, but nevertheless, it was there, so you could customize it. It was kind of going the route of the Wrangler, and Nissan, without mercy, just like, you know, cut the umbilical cord and said, nope, we're done with it. It had a cool name, it had a great reputation. Off-road, it was really good. It had that stadium seating. You know, we reviewed a bunch of them, because I think fuel economy, they decided to pull the plug just as overlanding was exploding and Jeep went from selling, you know, tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of Wranglers a year. Huge missed opportunity.
Yeah, I you're 1,000% right. You could even get a Pro 4X model.
Yeah.
You remember the Pro 4X model? I remember this distinctly. I was like 13 years old. We had it on loan as a tester. It was bright blue, which was really cool. And it had these lights in the roof.
Yeah.
It had these off-road lights in the roof with these little plastic covers.
I remember.
And we yanked the plastic covers off, and we could not figure out for the life of us how to turn them on.
Yeah.
But eventually we figured it out. You had to have the high beams on.
Off. High beams on, I think.
Yeah, because they were for off-road use only.
Only, yeah.
So they didn't want you blinding people on the road. So you turned on the high beams, and then you turned on the off-road lights. And it was just the coolest thing. I remember,
Or was it the high beams had to be off? It was one of those two. I forget.
Well, so my Mini's the same way.
Yeah?
The Mini, to turn on the rally lights, the high beams have to be on.
You mean the Mini you sold to Case?
The Mini I sold to Case, my ex-Mini. So I think that's how it worked in the Xterra.
Okay.
And they didn't do anything off-road. They were, they would just blind
you. Compared to today's lights, they were still...
Yeah.
Two fireflies up there.
Other thing about lights up on the roof is they always blind you. I mean, unless you have a spotlight dialed in perfectly, it turns the windshield into a solar flare, and then you can't see anything.
That could be a Roman rant, right? Enough of the light bars above the A-pillar, which is, the pillar that goes in the front windshield, because all it does is it just reflects off of the hood, and you're right, it absolutely blinds you, so you're almost dry. You'd be better off just to turn off all lights.
I did have that really cool Wrangler, though. My first Wrangler was a 80 or a 95, so it was a square headlight one, and I put those Casey Daylighters on that light bar above my windshield. Those looked so cool.
They look cool, but you really want like lights either, you know, where the winch lives, right above that maybe, or on the side of the car, right in front of the A-pillar, in the corners where the rear view mirrors.
They were useless. But the best part about the daylighters is they had the little yellow smiley caps on them.
Yeah.
And you could turn on the lights and then they would glow yellow.
Yeah.
And then people
would those caps
would
melt?
Smile and last. Yes, you couldn't do it for too long or they would melt. Mm. And also you couldn't go into parking garages. That was a real shame. I slammed them into a parking garage once, and they survived. They were really strong. So at this time, I'd like to take a quick break from our list and mention how you can support the podcast. So if you appreciate what we do, and this is a ton of work, check out our Patreon. So it's patreon.com, and then the site is TFLCar. Patreon.com/TFLCar, and we are greatly appreciative of any of the donation levels. It really helps us keep this podcast alive. Because believe it or not, it takes hours and hours and hours to edit them, especially if you're watching on YouTube.
I've got some blazy fur in my nose, Tommy. It's driving me crazy.
Blazy fur?
Yeah, blazy fur. I got some blazy fur in my nose. I've got the sweatshirt on, and we've this Bernese Mountain Dog, and he's like a fur shedding machine, and now I've gotten some fur in my nose.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's no good, dude.
Yeah,
that's why I wear black all the time now. That's the only thing I can wear.
He's a little fur ball.
He is a fur ball.
So I also want to stop and do a little this date in history.
All right. What happened in this date in history?
I do like history a lot. So 95 years ago today, on January 3rd, 1926, GM introduced the Pontiac brand.
And then 50 years later, it went away.
So this was a descendant of the Oakland Car Company. It went defunct in 2010, of course. However, do you miss Pontiac?
I do. I wish they had gotten rid of Buick, honestly, and kept Pontiac. Pontiac was a performance brand. How could you not miss, you know, the original GTO?
Yes, for sure. They did kind of have some dark eras there, though. As we hit the 90s and the early 2000s, they had some questionable
cars. Talking about the Sunbird? You don't like the Sunbird?
The Sunbird was a classic example of
you don't like the Pontiac Sunbird?
Yeah.
An underpowered convertible?
The supercharged models they did, the little supercharged V6s they did for a while, those are pretty cool.
Pray tell, you don't mean the Aztec.
I do miss the Aztec, actually. Yeah, don't come at me about the Aztec. I do like me an Aztec. But not only the Aztec, do you remember the Solstice?
I remember the Solstice.
Do you remember the turbocharged Solstice?
I do. Those are becoming very, like, with a certain crowd, very in right now.
Do you remember the Pontiac Torrent?
Do not remember the
Torrent. Yeah, you don't want to remember the
Torrent. Was that a station wagon?
I don't know. I think it was based on the Equinox. It was horrible.
What was the Pontiac station wagon? Wasn't there a station wagon, too?
Back in the day, there was.
How about a minivan? Was there a Pontiac minivan?
I think there was a Pontiac minivan. Yeah, the Torrent was a horrible car. Yeah. What is a Pontiac minivan?
The Zoomster? The Pontiac Zoomster?
Oh, that's what it's called. The Montana.
Oh, that's right. The Montana.
Man, they built some boring cars.
That's a good name, though. Damn, the Montana.
They had some other good names. The Pontiac Transport. That was another minivan.
They should reuse the Montana. Like the Chevy Yellowstone. Wouldn't that be cool?
They build a Chevy Montana.
Yeah?
Abroad, it's a little tiny pickup truck. It's called the Chevy Montana. Anyways, I thought that the history buffs among you would like to know that 95 years ago today, Pontiac was born.
Very good. All right, let's keep going down the list. When's my rant?
Your rant is coming up in 5 cars.
All right, let's keep going then.
So number 10 on our list is the Honda Passport Trail Sport.
Yeah, me and you went to look at it, and then Nathan got to drive it. And basically what Honda did was they took a Passport and made it look off-road worthy without making it more off-road worthy.
Yes, it was a real shame. So now there's like a big trend of off-road crossovers, right?
The Wilderness is a good example of that.
Wilderness is a great example. Where
Subaru, like Outback Wilderness or Forester Wilderness.
You lift it, and then you put on skid plates, maybe change the all-wheel drive system, big chunky tires. And Honda pretty much did it just an appearance package. So the Trail Sport, I think, changed the wheels maybe. It gives you some
stickers,
some orange stitching on the inside. But not much beyond that. Now, the interesting thing is when we went on the launch of the Trail Sport, they had one that looked really cool. It had like a 2-inch lift. It had skid plates on it. And it was really mean. It had a spare tire carrier. And Honda was basically like, look, hold on. We've got more coming. This is more coming, right? So we're thinking, we're speculating that maybe down the road we're going to see a true off-road version. But as it sits right now, the Trail Sport is just kind of
Really confounding because Honda does some of the best off-road side-by-sides, you know, I'm talking about, you know, their motorsport division, of course, right? Some of their best motorcycles, and yet somehow none of that DNA seems to translate into any of their cars, which is really weird because, like, off-roaders are just red hot right now. And so they, like, tipped their hat to off-roading, but then they didn't actually do anything, you know, like, give it a low range, Honda. You know how to build a low range. There's got to be some low range at some point that Honda's built. Right? Not just colors and stickers and all kinds of other stuff. Give it a low range.
I'm not sure. Well,
chunky tires. You can buy them anywhere. You can go to a local discount tire, Honda. Get some chunky tires. You just partner with Bridgestone. Pick a company.
They've never really done an off-roader, though. I mean, the original Passport was an Isuzu.
Yeah, they partnered with Isuzu. Has Honda done an off-roader? I'm trying to think if there's any, you know, the Isuzu Rodeo and the Honda Passport were like twins, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So the Isuzu Rodeo and the Passport were the same car. And then the Ridgeline's never really been that much better off-road, right?
Nope. Even the new one, the HPD, Honda Performance Development, right, is still more of an appearance package. Even though it looks cool, it doesn't exactly, you know, bring it when it comes to real off-road cred. So, yeah, it's a baffler, Tommy. I don't know why Honda doesn't, like, get on their motorsport division and rob them for some good ideas on how to make something that would truly be more than an appearance package.
So the next car on our list, and this was a kind of a big disappointment for me because I am actually, surprisingly, the only 24-year-old that's really into the Lincoln Continental nameplate. Is the reboot of the Lincoln Continental, which happened a couple years back. This was like a big deal for Lincoln because finally they got rid of the terrible three-letter MKXZES, and the Continental just wasn't that cool.
Yeah, I think all the livery companies in America were anxiously swooning to get their hands on the next Continental, and then when they got it, they were like, this thing isn't much bigger than, like, a Fusion.
Yeah, it was front-wheel drive. It was based on the Fusion. You remember the only cool thing about the Continental?
They did a special version of it.
They did? That was a cool one with the coach doors in the back.
Yeah, that was really cool.
But the coolest thing about the Continental, and unfortunately the only cool thing, were the door handles. There was, like, this one piece of trim that continued along the whole side of the car, and the door handles were kind of hidden in that. But it didn't look that cool. It just wasn't a true German or Japanese luxury car competitor, and it just...
Yeah, and then they did something really weird, right? So they had two EcoBoosts. They had a 2.7, right, which was in the truck, and a 3.5, which was in the truck.
Yep.
And they decided to, like, make a 3-liter that would be exclusive to the Continental.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Why? Why not put the 3.5 or the 2.7? Why do you need to, like, split the difference?
I mean, the really tricky thing is when you look at, like, the vehicles that are the signature in the brand, like the Jeep Wrangler, you've got the... why am I having so much... The Mini Cooper, right? The little Cooper. There's always a car that holds the brand DNA. The Porsche 911. And that was always the Continental. That was, like, the nameplate that meant a lot for Lincoln. And they brought it back, and it was just kind of, eh.
You know who got it right? Fisker. They just should have bought the freaking... not the current Fisker, the previous Fisker. Just
put the ones that burned down when they got a little bit wet.
That thing... Look, a Continental has to have, like, road presence. That's what it's all about. It's about making a statement, and it's about being, like... So the Japanese, of course, had this, like, magic ability with the Hondas, like Civic, to have a car that's bigger on the inside than on the outside. And Americans had the exact opposite magic, Tommy. They could take a car that's much bigger on the outside and make it tiny on the inside. And that was, like, cool because it showed that you had enough money to buy a land yacht and yet barely have enough room in the thing for you and your, you know, wife or girlfriend. Forget about the kids. And that's what the Fisker was, right? It was this massive car that had little tiny room inside, perfect. That should have been the Continental.
So you want the Continental to be worse than the Japanese karma. Car?
No, it's just different. It's just American.
I mean, it's worse.
A triple XL with, like, medium at best interior.
But that's just bad and lazy packaging.
No, it's not. It's just like, hey, we don't care. We have so much money and resources that we can squander them all on making this car outside.
Hey, we couldn't figure out how to give this car any interior volume.
No, that's not what it's about. It was about showing off in a much more conspicuous consumption sort of way.
I don't know. The Fisker was a good-looking car, but it was kind of a mess. From a reliability standpoint.
It also had a GM engine in it, so that would have been awkward for Ford.
And it had defunct batteries, remember? A123 batteries? That was a defunct company now, so when they go bad, oh my God. So I think we're both in agreement, though. The Continental was the rebirth of a nameplate. I think it's dead, right? Didn't they discontinue it?
I think it's dead, yeah.
You know, I was just in one, though. This was the only... I only have one story about the Continental.
Yeah.
I was being driven around in one,
yeah.
as most people do.
Yeah.
I think it was a manufacturer trip, and they had one to take me to the program. And I was talking to the driver, and I looked at the odometer, and he had 283,000 miles on it.
Wow.
Pretty good.
I mean,
it only took five transmission rebuilds to get it to 280, but the engine was original.
Look, let's face it, the Navigator is today's Continental, right?
That's a good point.
And so that's taken its place, and sedans are dead, and even if you were to make this thing like a Fisker, the Navigator would be the one that people would navigate to.
So now for something completely different,
yeah.
the Mazda Speed 3.
Yeah. What about the Mazda Speed 3? They killed it.
Well, it was a couple generations ago. They had this really insane hot hatch.
Yeah.
And it was totally overpowered. It had like
worst torque steer ever.
240 horsepower in a front-wheel drive car, but it was
functional hood scoop.
Mid-2000s front-wheel drive car, so they hadn't figured out the handling or the dynamics.
Every 16-year-old would have sold their mother to buy one.
Yep, I think Zach was telling me they were known for blowing up. They didn't have a great reliability record, but partly because every single one of them had a coffee can exhaust and a turbo the size of an equator on there. But when they came out with the new Mazda Turbo, right? You can buy a Mazda 3 Turbo. They have a lot of power. It's a lot better sorted, but they don't have the crazy flair that the Speed 3 has, and it's not called the Speed 3. I think that was a missed opportunity.
You know what it's called?
What?
The Veloster N.
Yeah, maybe.
Hyundai basically took that from them and ran with it, made a Veloster N, Elantra N, and now a Kona N.
The thing about Mazda, though, is they had a whole line of speed cars. They had the Speed 3, they had the Speed 6.
Yeah, Hyundai took it.
They had the Miata Speed as well, which was insanely cool. It's a shame that they walked away from that.
Yeah, I mean, how can you have horse and rider as one when the horse is slow, fat, and old?
Sure. All right. So number 7 on our list.
Do you get that? Do people get that or no?
I mean.
So that's like Mazda's design language, right? Horse and rider as one.
Oh, is that the Kodo design language?
It's not Kodo, but I forget what the name of it is in Japanese.
Okay.
I just know what it stands for.
Maybe it's Kazashi.
No, that's Smelly Wind or something.
Number 7.
Hey, do me a favor. Do number 7. I'll talk about it. And Google Kazashi. I'm really curious what it means.
All right. Number 7 on the list is the all new, the reboot. I should say reboot. Just a redo of the Subaru WRX.
Yeah. So people are really grumpy. They're pretty cheesed about the new WRX. They feel like that they have put too much cladding on the outside of it. The cladding doesn't bother me. What bothers me is, and this is true for a lot of other cars, I kind of feel like, you know, we're entering the era of the electric car, and yet no one, Tommy, as of yet, has done an electric sports car, except for, of course, Tesla, which, you know, sold them to people for $250,000 and promised them like 5 years ago and has yet to deliver. So and of course, there is a Rimac too, which is also unobtainium. But why couldn't the WRX be all electric? And that could be said for a lot of the latest cars. The BRZ 86 should have been all electric in my mind. And yet, you know, we're still waiting. And we're probably going to wait another 5 to 10 years before either of these two cars become completely electrified. So what does Kazashi mean?
It means nothing what you thought it meant.
No?
It means a sign of great things to come.
No, I think that's wrong.
No, it's true. Suzuki Kazashi is a meaning, which is a translation into sign. There you go. Kazashi, in kanji, is a Japanese word which means something great is coming, an omen, a sign, or a warning. The Kazashi was to be Suzuki's flagship sedan and exceeded Japanese government regulations concerning exterior dimensions and engine displacement for cars classified as compact. That's straight from the Wikipedia page. So now, while you're looking it up to try to prove me wrong, I'm going to talk about the WRX, and I don't think it should have been electric. I still think it should have been this crazy turbo all-wheel drive sedan that went when you let off the turbo, but they just didn't make it fast enough on the new generation. So the new WRX is only like 3 or 4 horsepower more than the old one, and maybe the STI is going to be the crazy one that hits 400, 500 horsepower, but the standard WRX, it looks like a Civic in the back. It's got cladding off the Crosstrek, and I don't understand it.
So horse and rider in one is Jinba Itai.
That's right.
Jinba Itai.
Jinba Tai.
Yeah, Jinba Tai. So that's what I was looking up. I wanted to make sure.
You didn't look up Kazashi?
No,
your
I
mighty
you.
Wind?
No, I believe you. I'm not going to out Wikipedia Wiki. Anyway, so I was trying to get that right. Let's try to get our facts right. All right, keep going. What's next?
So Hyundai Kona N. Fantastic car.
Yeah? You think there's a missed opportunity?
Well, as much as I love it, I think it should have had all-wheel drive.
Good point. Yeah, I agree.
The N line and the Hyundai lineup are great value, super fast, really fun to drive. You've got the Veloster, the Elantra, and now the Kona. The Kona's an SUV, but you can only get the Kona N in front-wheel drive.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe they should have made the Kona all-wheel drive. They've got the bits and pieces, of course. They certainly have the engineering talent. And then you'd be competing with cars like the Golf R, right? And you could probably compete with them at a substantial lower price. And it makes sense. A crossover should be all-wheel drive. So, yeah, good call.
Okay, so before we get to our top five, I wrote down that you have a rant. What is the Roman rant of the week?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for letting me do that. So recently, Tommy and I purchased, I don't know if you know, if you want to get all this content in one place, go to tfl-studios.com. You can download it as a little web app to your phone, and that way you won't miss any of our videos, stories, podcasts. Anyway, we've been going to Longmont to try to wash the new Grand Cherokee that we bought. Is it Main Street or Hoover? I don't know. Anyway, there's this brand new car. Maybe it's been there a while. There's this beautiful car wash, and it looks like it's very professional. And, you know, we spend a lot of time washing cars. And for the most part, when we wash cars, right, we wash them by hand. So we go into one of those, like, stalls, and we hose them off ourselves.
Yeah, like the little squirter things.
Yeah, but after 10 years, that gets old.
But this car wash looks amazing. It looks like an L.A. car wash.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's full complex. It's got these crazy arches with the hoses that have the vacuums in it. It's got the little washing team outside ready to help you.
Yeah, it's like a whole washing complex, which is beautiful. And I'm thinking to myself, this will be a great place to take all of our cars so that we don't always have to run out and do our self-wash, which takes a lot of time when you're doing video production, when you have to go wash something. And this would be hopefully quicker and more convenient. So I pull in, didn't even think about this, Tommy. I did not even think about it. Pay whatever it was, $15 or $20 for the basic car wash. And then as I'm putting the wheel into that, you know, little chock that then pulls your car through the car wash, I notice it's a touched car wash. How horrible is that? Mm. You know, where instead of having water squirt, you've got those horrible brush-like plastic or spongy, like, filaments that then go over your car and create these little swirls in your clear coat paint. It's for a car guy or gal, it's like watching, you know, somebody pull out fingernails. It's that tortuous and arduous of a process, seeing that Jeep get hammered by these like plastic filaments that are just destroying the clear coat. Because what happens is, you know, little rocks and little pieces of sand get caught in them, and then they just, you know, they whack your car, and they put these swirls in your clear coat. I was amazed. It didn't even occur to me that you would have that kind of a car wash in 2022.
Well, the interesting thing is this car wash is insanely busy. It's always got like a huge line of people outside, so we just assumed that it would have been popular because not only did it a good job, but I mean, I don't even think of touched car washes as being all that popular anymore, but apparently they still have a market.
I thought they were done like 20 years ago. I thought everybody out there was like, no, don't you dare whack this thing against my paint. And yet, you know, everybody's lining, and people are lining up like crazy for this.
Well, the one thing I will say about them, and I think the reason people like them, is having that material on surface does get your car very clean. So sometimes the squirty ones don't get all the salt or all the road debris off, but the brushes do seem to do a good job of whacking your paint into submission. So I do see why, like, non-car people use them, but they are very bad for your car.
Yeah, so then next time, right? Next time Tommy's like, hey, I found this other car wash at the gas station where you could actually pick whether it's touched or touchless.
Yes, and then I went there with my dad.
There with the Jeep again. We're like, thinking, we're not going to go back to that place because it's touched, so we're going to go to the touchless
one. Now, this was just one of the ones that you get at a gas station where you drive through and it cleans it. And we pull in, and it didn't give me the option. So now my dad thinks I'm over here like a liar, even though I swear 2 weeks ago it did. So once again, another touched car wash. But I just found one in Boulder. The Shell on whatever that is, 28th,
yeah,
had that option again. So I want to take you back and prove to you once and for
that
all
you can do touchless.
That you can do touched or touchless at the same touch car wash. Or
this should have like, do you want the touch one, the abrasive monster, or do you want the one that will not get your car quite as clean but won't destroy your paint?
If you're watching this on YouTube, please tell me someone else has seen this, because I swear to anything that I was just there last week with my Wrangler, and I went through it, and I paid my $10, and it had the big brushes, and right before I went in and selected, did you want touch or touchless, I clicked the touchless, the brushes stayed tucked against the wall, and it just squirted me down like a standard one.
In my mind, you might as well just put, you know, a bunch of razor blades and run your car through it. That's what I see in my mind when I'm going through those.
Hey, I mean, maybe there's a new set of brush technology that we've been missing.
It doesn't pick up, like, little...
Because I do recall the one in Longmont was interesting, because most of the time they have, like, the little bristles, right? The little aggressive bristles that really dig in there. The one at Longmont had these, like, little floppy plastic... I don't want to say, like, little floppy plastic things instead of the little bristles. So maybe those are better for your paint? I don't know.
You don't think those can, like, pick up little bits of sand? And
but they were smooth plastic, so I'd imagine...
Like 200 grit sandpaper.
I mean, in my mind, because they were, like, smooth, shiny plastic bristles, I would imagine the sand would fall right out of them.
It's funny, Tom. Yeah, we get a lot of people who want to work at TFL. Thank you. We love getting applications. And if, by the way, here, for all of you guys out there and gals listening, if you want to work here and you're asking what the qualifications are, they do require a degree in journalism and video production background. And as much as we love all of you listeners who sell cars and who manage fleets, we do require that you have some journalism background. So if you want to know what the number one thing you can do to become an automotive journalist, go to college and get a degree, I think, in broadcast journalism, especially if you want to do, you know, YouTube or TikTok or any kind of video production, or get a degree in new media. Also be prepared to spend a lot of time washing cars.
Yes, that's true.
All right, keep going down the list.
All right, number five on the list, and this was your idea, so I wrote it down. I have written down cheap Mini.
Cheap Mini. Yeah, Mini. So Mini moved, BMW moved the Mini brand upmarket. I think, you know, what made the Mini so hugely popular and like the car that like the Rolling Stones, I think Mick Jagger owned one, right, was that it was the car that like anybody could buy. So back in the day, you know, a Mini was very affordable. Today, it's anything but that, right? They're premium cars that you can have like in any way that you want. You could customize them, but they're anything but affordable. So I think if you could actually build a Mini that would be in the, let's say, $20,000 range realistically, right, or less.
So what would you say, just to play devil's advocate, the Mini folks would tell you, well, the Mini starts at like 20 grand, maybe just under 19.9.
Yeah, but the problem is no dealership ever specs those out. Right?
Well, I mean, it's
so
easy.
They're not gettable.
A lot of the times you see like Cooper S's, even the standard Cooper S hatch, and they'll be in like the $35,000, $37,000 range.
I think if you could build a cool basic Mini in like the Versa,
like $12,000 range?
Yeah, like in that range, then you'd have what was originally the spirit of the Mini.
Yeah, I agree. I think that'd be cool.
So I don't know if BMW could make any money with that in today's world. Probably not, but it would sell like hotcakes.
Fantastic idea. And you'd have to still make it fun. Like you can buy cheap cars today, like a Kia Rio is still a cheap car, but it's also like driving a toaster. Well, a lot of toaster talk today.
Yeah, you could. That seems to be the theme. You could do a lot with design without having the expensive materials. You know what I'm saying? So give it kind of the attitude and the design, but you don't have to have like the original Mini. Even your Mini, right? The dashboard is one giant piece of plastic.
Sure.
Right. There were like three gauges in the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I guess today you'd probably need a lot of airbags.
You need four gauges. Yeah.
But you don't have to have all the gauges. You don't have to have like an app that talks to the Mini.
It's tricky though because you need. I mean, not only do you need airbags, right? I mean, you have to meet crash safety requirements. You have to have crumple requirements.
So that all is expensive.
Emissions? Oh, what a bummer.
But get rid of all the infotainment or just use an iPhone.
What do you mean get rid of all the infotainment?
Just use your, like, there's your infotainment. Just plop it in like an Emmy, right? Like the Citroen Emmy where this becomes your entire infotainment entertainment console. You give it a key. Just a simple key. Would that be cool? Retro, a key, a regular hole for the key to go into.
Okay, yep.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea.
Maybe seats that actually, you know, aren't super expensively covered in expensive leather, right? Maybe make some kind of a basic, like, vegan cover for it. Make it very renewable.
Like vinyl seats?
Yeah, why not? That's I don't know, whatever that
this
is.
This is a Tommy rant of the day.
Yeah.
All these companies that are like, look, we have non-animal leather.
Yeah.
Well, it's just vinyl. It's been non-animal leather for the last 100 years. It's just vinyl.
Yeah.
Like it's not a huge marketing standpoint. That is the end of my rant. So number three on the list, actually, sorry, number four on the list is the Toyota FJ Cruiser.
Yeah, just ditto to what we said about the Xterra.
Like agreed.
2014, they pulled it at the wrong time.
Way too early.
Yeah. Just and now they're highly collectible. I know that Toyota just unveiled an electrified one that they might or might not build, right? They had this battery day kind of thing that they copied Tesla, where they showed, you know, whatever concept electric vehicle they had. And one of the coolest ones there was the FJ Electric. And I hope they build it. That's all I got to say. But yeah, it was a missed opportunity. I know they have the 4Runner, but they keep like flushing some of their best brands, including the Land Cruiser. And I don't understand it, Tommy.
So the other one I wanted to add quickly is the RAV4 TRD Off-Road. So there is a quote off-roady RAV4 TRD, but this is kind of my same issue I had with the Passport, where they just didn't do enough to kind of make it off-roady. They gave it some cool wheels and tires, and maybe it has like a skid plate and it's got TRD tuned shocks, whatever that means, but it needs a lift kit. It needs like a limited slip rear diff.
Dare I say low range?
Oh, well, that's too far.
That's
one bridge too far. Just get a 400 at that point. But it would be cool to have like a lower first gear, you know, retune the rear diff gearing.
I'd make it all electric.
That has been your whole trend today. You like electrics now.
Yeah, make it all electric. Look, they're always looking for white space. How about an electric off-roader? Look, Rivian has built, as far as I know, 400 cars and has 70,000 reservations for an electric pickup truck that they can't seem to be built. And yet Toyota, who could actually build it, seems to like walk away from that segment and keep, you know, doubling and tripling down on building the same thing they've been building for the last 20 years when the entire world is changing. So why not, you know, get ahead of the trend instead of being behind the trend?
Well, this brings me to number three, which I wrote down because you wanted me to, affordable EV.
Yeah, somebody needs to build one of those, like the, once again, like the Emmy. Well, so the Emmy is a Citroën you can buy in France. The French have a special category of car where you don't have to have a driver's license. So if you're too young or too drunk, and I mean that because you've had your license pulled in France, you could buy this very unusual class of car where it only goes like 25 kilometers.
So it's called the voiture sans permis. And what that means is
very good, Tommy.
Cars with no permits.
Does it mean like the mighty wind?
Anyways.
Horse and rider as one?
They're called VSPs, and they've been around since like the 60s and 70s. And you're exactly right. They have a top speed of, they're limited to a top speed of like 25 miles an hour. You can drive them. You used to be able to drive them when you were like 14. You could just get behind the wheel of one. They're really small. And
the French would be like, you're too drunk to drive a car, so drive this other car.
Yeah, true. Very true. Now, speaking of toaster cars, this really is a toaster car.
Yeah,
it's a perfect cube.
It's just missing two slots.
So the Citroën ME is, I mean, it's literally a square. It's all electric. It only goes like 50 kilometers.
Stellantis, you're supposed to have one. So Stellantis was supposed to have one. Nick, I'm talking to you, my man. You're supposed to have one in CES this week, right?
Yeah, I wanted to see it.
And then I emailed my friend Nick at Stellantis, and I said, Nick, we'd love to drive this thing. And he said, it's going back to France.
Why? They've got enough of them over.
They got enough in France, yeah.
The car is like 4,000 euros. Just leave it here. I think the company can take the blow of it.
If you've already spent the money to get, you know, let me know, and me and Tommy will jump on a plane, fly to Detroit, go to Chelsea, right?
Oh, yeah. I'd like to drive it around.
Yeah, we'll drive it around, and we'll, you know, we'll show that Stellantis is in the forefront of electrification.
Well, let's not get too ambitious with the forefront thing here.
And they're busily working on ways to reduce their carbon footprint that they have with a lot of their Hellcat vehicles, which we love, by the way. But they're offsetting them with these new and cool cars like the Emmy. Just let us drive it.
You can also lease an Emmy for like
and film it.
30 euros a month or something.
Yeah.
It would never work here in the States, so let's be honest. It goes 25 miles an hour. I mean,
it's like the French equivalent of like a side-by-side in America, right?
But it doesn't go off-road.
But that's what it would be like, right? People would have it in like people would have it like golf carts in retirement communities. They'd putt around on them, or they would have it like in Moab and putt around. Yeah, they would.
I think people in France use them in like little teeny weeny villages just to get around.
I'm not saying it's a side-by-side. I'm saying it fills that kind of a niche. Like that's the French version of that.
200 horsepower Polaris S, 4 horsepower Citroën.
Or an electric golf cart that they use in retirement communities. One of those two places it would work in.
Retirement community is not exactly a big car culture for purchasing new vehicles.
There's 300 million Americans, Tommy. A lot of them are retired.
Yeah, it's a bigger
market.
Soon enough.
It's a bigger market, thank you, than you think. anyway.
You're already shopping for your golf cart. Is that what you bring
Stellantis, you've got an image issue with your hell catification of everything. Let us drive an Emmy and show just how forward-thinking and carbon-neutral the company can really be.
I would like to drive it. It is very cool. So it's got the front end and the back end are the same.
Yes,
it's like one
way
big
cool.
plastic square. But the back end has red headlights for brake lights.
Yeah.
The front end has clear. The doors are asymmetrical, right? They open, one opens normally, the other one opens coach style because it's the same door assembly. Love it. It's a brilliant piece of engineering. Yeah, I would like to drive it.
Yeah, we have yet to see anything cool out of the partnership, right? So we went from FCA to Stellantis. We have yet to see any, everybody, of course, touts these partnerships as saving money and synergy and blah, 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 blah. And yet when, a year later, the guy who put it together has left the company, right?
Yep.
Mr. Manley is gone. Now the head of Mike Manley, who used to run FCA, is now the head of, I think, AutoNation,
mm-hmm.
right? He took his parachute, deployed it, and left. And so give us something that we can crow about as opposed to, just saying that Stellantis sounds like a boner pill.
So,
which it does, by the way.
$7,000, I apologize. It is built in Morocco. It's got 43 miles of range. It's very cool. I think it's really cool. I would love to drive one.
Yeah.
Eight horsepower. Anyways, enough about the Emmy. Number two on the list.
What is it?
This one's kind of a hot topic, and we haven't driven it. But you wanted it on the list. It's the Acura Integra.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah.
Whoa.
Whoa. We don't know yet, so it's too early. This is a potential missed opportunity. If this comes across as nothing more than a rebadged Civic, right? Which it's looking like it could be. Like if there's no magic sauce that's sprinkled on this to make it. So Tom, your mom had an Integra, right?
Yeah.
And back in the day, the Civic and the Integra were very far apart indeed. They were very different cars. And basically, if you were young like we were and struggling and you wanted to have like a near luxury car that you could afford, then you would get the Integra. Whereas the Civic was kind of the entry-level car. But if you just take a Civic and you rebrand it and stick an Acura badge on it and call it done, I think you're missing the magic sauce.
I have a bit of shocking news to many.
Right.
Throughout much of its history, the Integra has typically been based on the Civic.
I'm not saying it hasn't been based on the Civic, but it was far enough apart where there wasn't, like, there was a very clear. You wouldn't even think of the two in the same sentence.
All right.
But
all
now
right, okay.
I'm worried that it's all basically right. going to be, a tarted up Civic. I hate to use those words.
But hasn't it? I mean, okay. We'll have to wait and
What's
see.
The magic sauce?
But the Integra typically is based on the Civic Si. I mean, there's typically a lot in common between Integras and Civic Si's if you go back in history.
You got to do more than just, like, put
it's
an
yellow.
Acura badge.
It's yellow. It looks kind of like it looks great. I think the design is good. It's finally got a manual transmission. Another car in the States with a manual transmission. Love that.
It's also got four doors.
Yeah, but they've had four-door Integras. Four-door Integras date back to like the 80s. They've always had four-door Integras. It's a cool thing.
Okay.
I'm excited about
all
it.
Right.
Okay, number one, especially if it's...
I hope you're right.
A Type S version, a fast one.
I'm rooting for the Integra. It's a cool car. It's a cool nameplate. I'm glad they didn't, call it something like, the 2564 GT XRT, like everybody else is doing. So I'm glad they actually brought back a real name. And I hope it succeeds. I hope it flies off the shelves.
Okay, I hope you're right, Dad. And number one on the list, probably the most disappointing automotive missed opportunity in recent years, is the Chevy Blazer.
Yeah. Instead of being a true Bronco fighter, right, body on frame, they took the nameplate and they turned it into a little crossover that is used for commuting and, going to work as opposed to climbing Mount Everest.
It's a Camaro SUV, though, don't you know?
I didn't know that. I thought it was a little crossover. You know what? Me and Tommy were like... sitting and looking at the back ends of crossovers. And, I think as car guys and gals, you can probably tell, like, the light pattern at night so you know what car it is. With the crossovers, I can't tell. They're all identical. They are just the back end of any crossover, and there's probably two dozen of them or maybe even more, and they're so bland, so boring, so, like, uninspired. And it's a shame because once upon a time, the Blazer was, a roll up your sleeves, let's go at it, Mr. Bronco, VA powered, we're going to, kick some off-road butt or kick some on-road butt kind of vehicle. And now it's become just this little It's good. I mean, the Blazer is good for what it is, but it could have been so much more.
Well, the confusing thing is, right, is we often think of these OEMs like, I mean, they do such a big surprise when they reveal a car, right? But the companies know exactly what's going on in every other company. The engineers talk to each other, and they know exactly what Ford's doing and what Chrysler's doing and et cetera. So they must have known that the Bronco was coming with the Bronco nameplate, and they probably knew exactly what it was. Look, and then they come out with this thing.
Look, no one is begging their Ford dealer to sell them. I mean, their Chevy dealer to sell them a Blazer.
They do sell a ton of them. I will say the Blazer has been a big sales success.
But there's no buzz around it. You know, there's no one that's like refreshing their web browser to see if their reservation for the new Bronco was actually accepted, right? There's just and at the end of the day, you can sell a lot of cars and still be a flop. There's a lot of vehicles that sold a lot of cars, but you know, could have been much, much more.
Mm. Well, I think you're right, Dad. The Blazer was an iconic nameplate, and now that we see the rebirth of...
They could have called it anything else.
The Bronco.
They could have called it the Yellowstone, Tommy.
Or the Montana.
They could have called anything else but the Blazer. Why take this iconic nameplate and turn it into something...
Well, so what do you think of the Trailblazer? The little teeny-weeny guy. The three-cylinder Korean-built. I actually, contrary to most... opinions.
I think the Trailblazer is as good as a Renegade.
The Trailblazer is surprisingly good. So people were upset because the old Trailblazer was this big straight six behemoth, and then they had the V8 models, which had three rows. The new Trailblazer is a little itty bitty tiny thing with the three-cylinder engine, but it's a lot of fun, especially the active one.
I think it's better than the Blazer.
Whoa.
I think if I were to have a choice between the Blazer and the Trailblazer, the one that's got more like personality by far is a Trailblazer.
I like the little Trailblazer. Yeah. It's a lot of fun, and it's pretty good interior. It's pretty good value. The active one isn't half bad off-road, too.
You took it off-road.
Skid plate on it, little off-road tires.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a Wrangler, but it's
like a Renegade.
But the Blazer, they should have come out of the gate screaming with an off-roader and not this on-roader. Nothing against the Blazer. It's fine. It's got a good V6. It's got a cool air vents. It looks pretty neat, but it just doesn't have the Blazer.
GM had one of, when they owned Hummer, right? They put together one of the best off-road engineering teams, and then they had to basically rebuild it for the new Hummer EV. But now that they've got the team back in place, why not take some of that hard-fought experience building the Hummer EV and actually put it into, like, a Raptor fighter? And then we're going into, I know, TFL truck territory here, right? Talking trucks. I don't want to step on Andre's toes, but I just feel like GM really needs to take it up a notch or two in their off-roading.
Mm.
Right? I mean, they've got a couple of great off-roading trucks. They've done some really cool things with their shock technology, with the Multimatics. But can you think of a car that has as much off-road tech that's GM brand? I can't think of one.
No, I think you're right, Dad. It really is a shame.
Chevy doesn't have anything except for the trucks. Cadillac doesn't have anything.
Like you mentioned, I mean, Colorado ZR2 is a pretty amazing off-roader.
I still had a car.
And the Silverado is also looking good.
Car.
And the Yukon AT4 and Silver...
They have a Z71.
Tahoe is okay.
But we took it off-road. It was okay.
It was okay. Yeah, it was fine.
I mean, it wasn't any better or worse than any other cars in that segment.
Yeah, it may be a little better because it's got better tires and it had recovery points and it had that limited slip dip.
You think it was better than like an LX?
No, but it's probably better than a...
which competes directly against
probably
it.
Better than like an Expedition. I'd probably take it over an Expedition.
Off-road, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But no, so those are our top 15 automotive...
Missed opportunities.
That's the word. Thank you, Dad. Lots of toaster oven discussion today. I'm sure we'll get some interesting chat in the comment section if you're watching on YouTube.
I'm sure an email from Tom saying, you owe me $3,000 now.
Also, yeah, exactly. Also, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, be sure to give us a like and leave a comment in the section where you can leave a review. That'd be really cool.
What if they say we bicker too much?
Well, we do bicker too much, so that would be 100% right. But we're working on it, folks. We're trying to fix the bickering. I'm really working on agreeing more, so I do apologize about that.
Yep, and remember, head on over this week. We're actually moving up the truck podcast to Wednesday morning. Usually it's on Friday.
Oh, yeah?
You know why that is, Tommy?
Because Andre is going on vacation.
It's not because Andre. It's because Andre is working harder than ever.
Oh.
There's the new electric Silverado coming. If you're listening to this today, it's coming this Wednesday. I want to say it's Wednesday morning is the embargo. And we've got some exclusive content that Andre is going to dive deep into. By the way, you're not supposed to use deep dive. It's verboten. It's one of those terms. No more.
Well, we had a good term for it. Everything you ever wanted to know.
Yeah, that was So we're going to ask some exclusive content. So we moved up his podcast to Wednesday morning to the deadline so that you can learn everything about the new EV. Look, an EV Silverado comes around once, Tommy. Right? Once.
Maybe twice. There might be next generation.
Well, no.
Maybe
first time. The first time.
Well, the first time of anything by default comes up once.
And next time there, you know, the Fusion one comes up, I'm going to be long gone and you might be sitting there with my grandson or granddaughter. Who knows?
We will see, huh?
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, guys.
Thanks for watching. Remember, check out TFL Talking Trucks podcast, both on TFL Talk, our YouTube channel, and of course, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, and we'll see you next time.
Ciao.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.